bringing tokens onto Bitcoin and Lightning, so with projects such as Taproot Assets or even RGB, because it's quite similar, let's put it that way. I think it's interesting, but can be dangerous. The goal is to bring DLCs to Lightning. This way you can have the same things, but off-chain. The problem that isn't addressed per se by DLCs is how to find a counterparty for your trade. So say, for example, that you want to short Bitcoin, you'd have to find someone who agrees to long Bitcoin for the same amount. 90% of users, but they only contribute 10% of the overall volume. And then the 10% that remain, they contribute 90% of the volume. One thing we could look at is how it could interact with Nostr. So maybe you could trade on the markets without leaving your Nostr client.
Fenice Michalakis is a developer at LN Markets, a Bitcoin derivatives exchange built on the Lightning Network. In our conversation, we talked all about trading on Lightning. We talked about Taproot Assets, whether that will have an impact on LN Markets business. We talked about LN Markets in general and some of the different types of trading that can be enabled on Lightning and so much more. Before we get into today's show, just a quick message from our sponsor. Today's show is sponsored by Stackwork. Stackwork is a Lightning-powered transcription tool that takes the best of AI and humans to create better, faster, less expensive transcripts. We'll have more from Stackwork later in the show. Fenice, welcome to the show. I am so excited to talk about LN Markets, the work you're doing in the Lightning ecosystem, the great Lightning newsletter that you write. But before we get into that, let's step back, give listeners a bit of perspective. Tell everyone a little bit about your life prior to Bitcoin.
Okay. First, thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here because I'm a watcher of the show, and it's really fun to be there. My life prior to Bitcoin, I was just an engineering student. Prior to that, I discovered first crypto and then Bitcoin, sadly in this order, during my while I was a student, and I decided to get involved. Participating in a student association on the topic. And then I joined LN Markets as my first job post-graduation. And that's it.
What was you said you discovered crypto and then Bitcoin. What was the reason that crypto first kind of stuck in your mind and made you go, wow, that's pretty cool? And then what was the reason you decided then to switch over to Bitcoin?
Basically, I'd say it's ignorance. Because, of course, I knew Bitcoin existed, but I just dismissed it. I viewed it as the old dinosaur that was already kind of deprecated, and I was all in on Ethereum, stuff like that. So I think it's quite a common trap for newcomers to believe that Ethereum is the one thing and Bitcoin is too old and doesn't do anything. And it really took me a real step back after the 2017 bull run to mature that in my mind and finally understand what it was all about and how Bitcoin is the real thing and Ethereum is just a distraction.
Was the Lightning Network, did that play a role in you understanding that you could do things on Bitcoin?
Yeah, definitely, because I really came to this realization in 2019, 2020, something like that. So Lightning was becoming something you could actually use. And so I still remember using Phoenix for the first time at this time, for example. It was already a wallet you could use without having to really understand how Lightning works behind the scenes. And so it was really kind of an aha moment for me when I discovered Lightning this way. And I'm sure it played a role. So there is this aspect and then the monetary aspect as well and the censorship resistance aspect, which really played a role. But the fact that Lightning existed and allowed to make Bitcoin what it was supposed to be in the first place, so peer-to-peer cash. It really matters for my decision to focus on Bitcoin at this time.
Yeah. And so you tried out Phoenix, started playing around with Lightning. What then made you go, I want to build on Lightning. I want to be building cool tools that push this space forward.
So yeah, the real story, but when I first played with Phoenix, one of the websites I played with Phoenix on was LN Markets at the time, because they launched in March 2020. It was a pandemic. I was bored at home. And so I just played with it. And you could already use LN URL to log in onto LN Markets. And it was kind of magic, because for the first time, you just have to scan a QR code with an app on your phone, and you're logged into the website. It was, LN Markets being a French company really helped as well, because there is Async, who develops Phoenix, which is a French company as well. And so as I was coming out of my engineering school, I was looking for basically opportunities, but in France. And so it really helped to see that there was a scene locally already, with potentially jobs opportunities.
That's amazing that LN Markets, I just totally forgot that it was March 2020 when it launched. So it's been up for over 3 years now. When did you get in touch with the team and decide that this was a company you wanted to work with?
So basically what happened was I was doing my end of school internship. So in engineering schools in France, you have to do a 6-month internship at the end. And so I was doing this in a, I don't know how you call this, in a...
like an internship between after school?
Yeah, exactly. And it was not really, it was in the fiat world. It wasn't really interesting, but I wanted to try this out to confirm that I wasn't definitely interested in working in this area and that I wanted to go all in on Bitcoin. And right at this moment, I saw on Romain's Twitter that they were looking for developers, and I just sent him a DM, and he answered, why not? And we had a few calls, and that was it.
I had Romain on the show, I want to say it was episode two or three, one of those early episodes, and I think it was three. And this was October of 2021. So I guess it had been up for a while, but it was one of those things where there were only like, it felt like to me at the time, there was only like a handful of companies building on Lightning. And I was going through them one by one. I was like, I want to talk to everyone in the Lightning ecosystem. And I thought to myself, there may only be like 10 or 12 people that are willing to talk to me. And that might be the end of the show. That might just be it. But of course, as time went on, I discovered way more people building. I think there was an influx of new people that came in to build. And now here we have this incredible Lightning ecosystem that just continues to grow every month, it seems. And I love watching the numbers on LN Markets continue to tick up. But for those who aren't familiar with LN Markets, can you just give a quick high-level overview of how you explain the product to people?
So right now, what LN Markets is centralized derivatives trading platform. So derivatives are things like futures and options, where you can kind of bet on the price of Bitcoin, on how it moves. Let's put it that way. And what sets us apart is that we're using Lightning for deposits and withdrawals. And this way, users can have their funds on their own Lightning wallet. So yeah, it's safe, it's their own keys. And when they want to trade, they can instantly and quite cheaply deposit funds on the platform, open a trade. And when the trade is over and they want to get back their funds, they can do so instantly as well, because we're using Lightning for withdrawals too. And so it helps mitigate one of the most important risks for traders, which is counterparty risk, where your funds, while they're on the platform, they're at risk of being stolen by the platform or by an hacker. Or if the platform go in bankruptcy, maybe you'll lose your fund, you don't know. And so the goal is to minimize the amount of time during which you need to have your funds on the platform. And so right now on LN Markets, it's just the duration of the trade and nothing more. And of course, we're looking at improving on that so that the whole trading experience can be self-custodial, But right now, as we are right now, once you deposit the funds to open a trade, it's custodial. But you can take control, take back control as soon as the trade is over.
Okay, I want to touch on custody a bit later in the show, but first I want to focus on Lightning, because I think there's still a lot of people who, they may have a Coinbase account or they may have some other, you know, centralized trading platform in their jurisdiction, and it may not have Lightning integrated. Can you just double down on that pitch for why Lightning is so important? What does that mean for traders? And are there any kind of interesting, maybe for advanced or more professional traders, what are some of the improvements that they might see to their profits and losses by being able to leverage Lightning?
So what Lightning brings is essentially instantaneity. So when you're using Outchain, you have to wait, especially when depositing on exchanges. You have to wait typically 4 to 6 confirmations. So that means when your transactions get mined in a block, you have to wait for 3 to 5 additional blocks to be mined on top of this block before the exchange will consider that your deposit is final, and that will then let you use your funds on the platform. So that means that when you deposit, you usually have to wait at least 1 hour before you can use the funds. And for if you're just using the exchange to DCA, for example, it's not such a big deal. You can wait. But if you're trying to trade, to time the market, to do stuff like that, where there is really a time aspect to it, what you're incentivized to do then is to just leave the funds on the platform so that you're sure that they are already there and they're ready to be used when you need them. And so Lightning essentially removes the need to keep funds on the platform, because you can just deposit and it will instantly be available for use on the platform. You don't have to wait anymore. And on top of that, what we've seen is that when on-chain fees are high, it becomes more and more interesting to use Lightning, because on Lightning you have so the fee model on Lightning is completely different. At times it can be more interesting to use on-chain, but when on-chain fees are high, it's more and more interesting to use Lightning to withdraw funds.
Do you see a big spike in usage of LN markets when we have some of these on-chain fees really spiking up?
Not really. What really drives volume on LN markets is essentially price volatility. And we don't see much of action coming from on-chain congestion at all, I think. Because I guess, people who use on-chain are... So, yeah. I don't think they think of LN markets as a way to avoid the high on-chain fees yet. Maybe it will come one day. But
and are LN markets users, are they like hedging on LN markets and making trades elsewhere? Are they using this as like an arbitrage opportunity between exchanges, or is it mostly just people trading on LN markets as their single trading venue?
Good question. We don't really know, I guess, what people are doing on the platform. Some of them are different, I think, are using LN markets as their main venue. But yeah, I don't think we would have a way to really know that. We could maybe look at data from other exchanges and try to guess if they are doing some arbitrage, but our own price feed is derived from BitMEX, for example, and Deribit. So I don't think there is much of an arbitrage opportunity there, because if I wanted to arbitrage BitMEX or Deribit's price, I would be doing so in BitMEX or Deribit themselves. Unless maybe there is the Lightning aspect, which would be interesting for them. Maybe it could be a way indeed to arbitrage BitMEX or Deribit prices, but more efficiently, because you can move the funds with Lightning instead of having to wait for confirmations.
All right, I want to talk about trading specifically, because I think this word is like a lightning rod for Bitcoiners. There's a lot of very strong opinions on trading. And I think many Bitcoiners will look at it and go, trading is a fiat business. It is essentially gambling. It is not, you know, real Bitcoiners don't do that, is what the kind of critique might be. I want you to take the opposite side of that argument and talk a bit about why this trading tool that you built on LN Markets is an important piece of infrastructure.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, of course, it's today it's often something quite speculative to trading on derivatives and stuff like that. But it's not only that, as you point out, and it didn't originate it like that, because the first derivatives actually were on. It's not really what happened, but the first option was on olive oil back in ancient Greece, and it was to try to hedge against the fluctuation of the price. So, for example, the idea is that, for example, if you were a baker and you're producing bread, there are a few things that come into the fabrication of bread, and so, for example, there's wet. There's energy, stuff like that. But let's take wheat, for example. What you'll want to do is you need to buy wheat, for example, every 3 months. And then you want to be able to sell your bread for €1 per baguette every time, because else people won't buy it. And so, but you can be sure of the price of wheat in the next months. And so what you're going to do is try to reduce uncertainty by buying a contract that allows you to buy wheat at a given price in the future. And you're buying this contract, so you're paying a little premium now, but to have the certainty that you'll be able to buy wheat at a certain price later. And so that's basically what futures and options are, and that's why they were made in the first place, as a tool to hedge against price fluctuations. And as you can see, there are many, many cases where it might be interesting for you. So it's in the example I took, it's really clear for productive activities where you have to use resources and transform them. But there are cases where it's useful for individuals as well. For example, when you want to try to reduce Bitcoin's volatility because you're trying to use it as a mean of payment in your everyday life, and it's just not suiting this use case right now because it varies too much. You might use derivatives to try to reduce the volatility and get something that is more stable in terms of dollar or in terms of purchasing power, for example.
Are there any other examples of Bitcoin businesses that you can speak to where it's kind of like this baker situation where the baker has a bunch of input costs? They have to buy the wheat. They have to buy some of the other components of the bread, and they don't want to take on that risk. Like who is an example of like a Bitcoin business that might have a similar view as this baker would?
Miners are the prime example, I think, because they are extremely dependent on the price of energy, for example. And there is a price of hardware as well, but I believe quite less so. So the prime component of a miner's margins comes from its ability to pay to buy cheap energy, basically. So they are huge interest in having exposure to this kind of instruments for energy, and I guess they are doing this. What they are doing as well is purchasing is doing contract agreements with energy producers. So this way they are looking in a price, and in exchange they're engaging themselves to, for example, consume this much power during this much years. So they're already doing it. And I think it was Luxor Mining who is working actually right now on. They already developed it, but they are proposing some hash rate index, which can be used to hedge against the fluctuations of hash rate price, so how much it costs you to produce a given number of hash per second. So yeah, miners, I think, are really in need of something like that. And they are, I'm sure, using this kind of instruments all over the place.
Are there any other forms of trading or any other forms of derivatives that you think might be useful to build on Bitcoin or Lightning? Like maybe outside of futures and options. Is there anything else that kind of fits into the derivatives category?
I don't know. I think what might be interesting is to build stuff that you can have by composing with futures and options. I don't know. So maybe there are, I'm not really in the financial profile of the company, so I wouldn't be able to really say, but...
Outside of financial derivatives, are there any other types of trading that you'd like to see proliferate on Lightning? Because like one thing that I've talked about a couple of times, I see this as like a real obvious opportunity, but it seems like no one has taken the chance to build this yet, is sports betting on Lightning, where it seems like the tools are all there to build something cool on Lightning. The average bet size for most sports books online is like $8 or $10, fits roughly in the size of Lightning payments. Seems like instant settlement is a very valuable thing. And to me, I just go like, well, that seems like a cool idea to be built on Lightning that no one's quite done yet. Is there anything else along that line that kind of strikes you as an interesting thing to be built on Lightning?
So yeah, sports betting, I think, is a very good example. Apart from that, I'm not sure I'm saying something right now, but I agree with you that sports betting is weirdly, it's weird that it isn't a big thing yet, because Lightning really is useful for that. I think it would make everything easier. And there are a few, I think a few platforms that propose Lightning and deposits and withdrawals and allow you to bet. But yeah, it's still small platforms. Sometimes you're not really sure where you're depositing your funds to. So yeah, there is this aspect as well. But yeah, no, I don't have any other.
I think the reason sports betting strikes me as interesting is because typically these are short enough durations that you're betting that week for a game, and you're not betting like 6 months in advance, usually. So I think it's HODL contracts, Super Testnets project, and it kind of lets you make those bets in shorter time frames, but it might not work very well for something like prediction markets, like a general political prediction market where you might be betting, you know, a year in advance, who's going to be the next president of whatever country. So, I guess for all listeners, I'd encourage everyone to think really critically about what tools can be built on Lightning. And I think they'll find that there's some interesting new ones that haven't even been tackled yet. So excited to see more innovation in that space. I want to talk a little bit about Taproot Assets now. And first, just get your thoughts on Taproot Assets as a project. What do you think about it, and where does it fit in at LN Markets, if at all?
So bringing tokens onto Bitcoin and Lightning, so with projects such as Taproot Assets or even RGB, because it's quite similar, let's put it that way. I think it's interesting, but can be dangerous at the same time for some reasons. As you can see, I'm not completely settled on the matter yet, because for example, when I'm saying it can be dangerous, we've seen stuff, for example, on the Ethereum blockchain with stablecoin issuers, for example, such as USDC, who because they are in position of deciding which fork of the chain is the valid one, and hence they will so they are in the position to decide which fork, in case of a soft fork, for example, they will regard as the valid one, and so hence USDCs will have value only on this side of the fork. And so it puts them in a really strong position to influence the evolution of a protocol. And that's something that we've already seen played out during the merge on Ethereum between proof of work and proof of stake. And I think it's something that we should be a bit worried about on Bitcoin, because right now, because we don't have these huge tokens, we're quite protected from that. But that for me, that's the big thing that makes it a bit dangerous. And it's the same for drive chains, for example, where if a drive chain becomes too prominent, they can then influence future soft forks as well. So that's on the cautious part, but then it allows to create some interesting stuff, I guess. Right now on LN markets, we wouldn't have really a fit for that. What could be, it could be used, for example, if we wanted to add equities, for example. I think equities are the best example of how useful it could be, because it's not really a shitcoin. It's just a company issuing equities. And then you could, for example, instead of trading Bitcoin against a shitcoin, so the US dollar, you could trade Bitcoin against something that is less a shitcoin, for example, an equity. And it would be maybe more interesting for traders to have access to this kind of markets. And you could represent the equities with such tokens. But the thing is, I'm not entirely, for example, one of the main usage of a lot of Bitcoiners see for tokens are stable coins. And right now with things such as stable sats, we kind of already have stable coins on Lightning. And that's why I'm not completely sure that Taproot asset will really bring something decisive enough in this area, because the idea of Taproot asset is that you have a token somewhere on the network and you want to send it on the other side of the network, and you just the token is you send it to a liquidity provider which you share a channel with, and it's transformed into sats. The sats are going through the network, and on the other edge of the transfer, it is converted back to the token. And so it's basically how stable sats works too, because you're just sending sats. So that's why I think a lot of people view Taproot assets as especially useful to do stable coins, but we already have stable sats, and I'm not sure how it will play out. Maybe Taproot assets are better for that, but I don't know.
I mean, there is a clear product market fit right now for stable coins on other chains. It seems like the volumes and the amounts of stable coins on these other chains, just like enormous orders of magnitude bigger than Bitcoin today. So I kind of wonder, maybe you have some perspective on this, because I know you do have a swap feature on LN markets where you can swap your Bitcoin into a dollar denominated kind of futures contract where it pegs. Why aren't people using that in the same volume that they are on other chains?
I think it depends on where you're looking at. For example, in the Blink wallet, so formerly known as the Bitcoin Beach wallet, they have this feature. So that's it's where the name Stable Sats come from. They're the one calling it Stable Sats, where you can use, as you described, future contracts to peg to the value of dollars. And so I think, for example, in in El Salvador. Maybe it's I don't know, but maybe it's the dominant way to have a stable balance in dollars. But I think on the other end, people just want the cheap, easy option. And if what they can easily access is USDT on the Tron blockchain, they will use this because they just want to have quick access to dollars and being able to spend them quickly and easily. And Lightning is better and better in terms of usability, but it's maybe not quite there just yet, especially if you're used to using blockchains and you don't want to learn something a bit new with which Lightning is a bit different to the way blockchains work. So maybe it comes from that. And obviously, so USDT has established itself as a really a big player. And I guess it will be hard to escape this kind of network effect.
One of the risks you outlined about stable coins, bringing them onto Bitcoin, is that if that stable coin grows large enough, it can now exert influence on the Bitcoin network. What is the threshold at which that becomes a real issue? Like how big does a stablecoin have to be? I guess it's a relative metric, right? It would have to be relative to the size of Bitcoin. Because if Bitcoin goes up 10x, then now you have to have a 10x larger stablecoin for it to be an issue. But where's that threshold lie? How big is does stablecoin need to get before we go, whoa, that's an issue?
That's a good question. But what the thing is, you can have you have a maximum of 20 million Bitcoin, but you can have as much as many stablecoins and tokens built on top of that using RGB or Taproot assets, and so it's quite easy to, I think, completely overcome in terms of market cap, the market cap of Bitcoin on the Bitcoin blockchain, but with some stablecoin token. So I guess I don't know really where the threshold is, but the thing is, you're adding something completely external to the Bitcoin ecosystem. So I think what really plays a role in the fact that incentives are quite aligned on the Bitcoin protocol, that everything is quite comes from inside the system itself, except for energy, which is used in Bitcoin mining. And then if you add tokens and things like that, it can really change the incentives. Yeah, and I don't know indeed where this result is, but I guess it could become an issue quite quickly if there are lots of people who have interest in who hold this stable coin. They want to be on the chain where the stable coin still holds value, and so it can completely redirect a soft fork. But yeah, maybe it would never become an issue, but we noticed it was the case on Ethereum. So I don't really see if Taproot assets and RGB are to be a success. I don't really see why it wouldn't be the case on Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to outline these things, right? To bring up these things that you think could become issues, whether or not they actually do. But I want to clarify your point about the market cap there was that it may not be important that this one stable coin grows larger than Bitcoin, but if you have thousands of coins all combined having a market cap larger than Bitcoin, which I think at times Bitcoin's market cap, I know this isn't a perfect metric, but it has been less than 50% of the overall crypto market cap, meaning there is more market cap, whatever value we want to ascribe to that term. There has been more than 50% of that market cap in all the thousands of crypto tokens than there has been in Bitcoin at times. It's also been the reverse. So is it the idea that if everything did move over to Bitcoin, now all of a sudden there's this incentive for more value to in all these other coins and tokens to then exert influence on the Bitcoin network? Is that the idea?
No, not really. I think it would still have to be one or a few tokens or stable coins, because the problem arises when there is one or a few entities. So for example, I don't know, Coinbase or Tether or something like that, who can decide which part of the fork that we consider as valid. What I mean is, I don't think you need to compare the stablecoin market cap with Bitcoin's market cap, because a lot of the Bitcoins that exist today, for example, are lost, or they are not used by anybody. There are Satoshi's Bitcoins, stuff like that. Whereas for a stablecoin, usually it's people are using them and they are counting on them to keep their value. And the whatever the side of the fork you end up into, you will still have the same number of Bitcoins as you did prior to the fork. But what changes is whether you still have the same, and you still have the same number of tokens, but what changes is whether they will have value or not. So any rational individual who holds both Bitcoin and this token would choose, presumably, to go on favor the chain that the, for example, stablecoin issuer described as being the valid one for them. So that's where they can play a role without even having to be something more than, I don't know, 10% of Bitcoin's market cap. Of course, for it to have a substantial impact, it would need to at least have some scale, but I don't think it needs to be really, really big to play your role.
I hope you're enjoying the show so far. Just a quick message from our sponsor, Stackwork. Stackwork is a lightning-powered platform for generating high-quality transcripts of all your audio or video content. They combine AI engines and hundreds of human workers all over the world who are paid over the Lightning Network to assemble these transcripts. And that's what lets Stackwork create better, faster, and less expensive transcripts. To see the results for yourself, you can check out my personal website where I host transcripts for all my podcast episodes. If you want to learn more about Stackwork, visit stackwork.com. That is stakwork.com. Okay, let's transition to talk a little bit about custody and self-custody. You mentioned at the beginning, yes, LN Markets today is a custodial platform. Having Lightning means that users can limit the amount of time that you are in custody of their funds. But you did allude to the possibility of a fully self-custodial experience. Can you talk about how that might work?
One way of doing it, maybe we'll discover more, but is to use what we call DLCs. So DLCs are discrete lock contracts. And so basically it's a way to make a trade or a guess with someone. For example, you and I, we decide to bet on the price of Bitcoin tomorrow. And I say that it will be above, $30,000. And you say it will be less than that. And we can create a smart contract, which will automatically settle tomorrow at a given time. And if you win, it will send the funds we deposited into the contract to you. And if I win, it will send the funds to me without any further interaction from us. So it's self-custodial in the sense that you can make a bet or engage in a trade, and you don't have to trust your counterparty, because once both of you have committed to the result of the trade, everything is quite set in stone, and there is really a way to escape from the trade once it's been made. And it's similar to Lightning in the sense that it uses unbroadcast Bitcoin transactions as well. So basically what you're doing is you're just signing a bunch of transactions and your counterpart is doing the same. And when the bet expires, you can just publish the corresponding transaction and get the funds. And the missing piece here in what I'm describing is it relies on an oracle who will publish the result. And it's when the oracle publishes the result that you can then publish the corresponding transaction and claim the funds. So that's basically the way it works. And it works already on chain. You can use DLCs. But now the issue is that it requires on-chain transactions. And so the goal is to bring DLCs to Lightning. This way you can have the same things, but off-chain. And so it's quite difficult to achieve as well. For example, there are 1011 who are working on that. And we're kind of beginning to look at this as well.
Are there any changes that need to be made to Bitcoin to bring DLCs to Lightning?
No, I don't think so. So maybe there are some changes that could make it easier, but it's kind of working as of today. It's just that it's a bit difficult because you have to do... You're taking a Lightning channel, and the thing is, if you would just use a Lightning channel and make a DLC inside, then the problem you would have is that anytime something else happens on the channel, for example, you're routing a transaction, you would have to update the DLC and so enhance, resign every transaction that represents a potential outcome of the DLC. And so it would be extremely compute intensive and stuff like that. You would be signing transactions all day long. And so you have to perform certain operations in the channel to put the funds of the DLC apart and put the traditional Lightning channel apart and don't mix them up together so that you can have a DLC in a Lightning channel. And that's the difficult part, yeah. But no, it can work as of today. It right now the process is in, I guess, making it work in practice and coming with a specification as well so that it can work quite the same between different implementations and different implementations can talk to each other. But yeah, we don't need a soft fork. We don't need anything new.
Does this disrupt LN Markets business at all if there's now this like self-custodial method for making these trades? Like, is there a risk that people go, oh, well, we don't even need LN Markets now, we can just use this DLC?
Yeah, maybe. And that'd be I'd say that'd be great overall, because if you can skip an intermediary, it's all the better. The problem that isn't addressed per se by DLCs is how to find a counterparty for your trade. So say, for example, that you want to short Bitcoin, you'd have to find someone who agrees to loan Bitcoin for the same amount so that you can enter a trade with them. And so that's where LN Markets or 1011 can play a role, is in either being the counterparty or helping both sides of the trade meet. But of course, now that we have a communication protocol such as Nostr, for example, maybe it won't even be necessary. I saw that the team from Mutiny, they, in the latest blog post, they mentioned building a Nostr DLC P2P marketplace. So maybe it will be what will be used in the end. But yeah, it's not a trivial task to build such a marketplace. I guess that's one of the intent behind the SIFKit as well. It could be used this way, but as we see, it's really a hard problem. You have lots of things to ponder. You have a reputational problem, for example. How do you know if someone who makes an offer for a trade is legit or either you wouldn't lose your funds, but you would lose time, and hence it's you would have locked up funds that could have been used in another way, so you're losing money in the end. So yeah, that's the big problem, and that's where companies such as Ellen Markets can maybe still play a role in the future.
Right. So that fundamental problem of bringing buyers and sellers together in a marketplace still exists, and that is still a role for Ellen Markets to play. It's just that now you don't have to all have everyone trading on your custodial platform. You may be able to do it elsewhere.
Exactly. And there's the price discovery problem as well. So it's not just finding someone who wants to buy when you want to sell. It's really agreeing on what is the price of Bitcoin and stuff like that.
So let's say you and I were entering into a trade. Let's imagine we have DLCs on Lightning, and you and I decide we want to make a trade. I say Bitcoin is going to be above $100,000 next year, and you say it's going to be below. If we are to make a trade, what trust do we have? What are we trusting in that process? Like, imagine we're trusting an oracle and whoever wrote the DLC that it was written correctly, right? Are there any other parties involved here?
Not really. You're trusting the software you're using, that it's creating the good transactions and stuff like that. You kind of trusting the oracle, but you're not. So I believe it would require what we call BLS signatures, but you could even build a blind oracle, which wouldn't even know what it signs, because the risk is that the oracle colludes with your counterparty. If it happens, the oracle could say that the price was 120K, whereas when it was not, and so you'd be defrauded. But there are ways to build the records in a way that they don't even know what they're signing, which event they are signing. And so this way they can't even partner with your counterparty to screw you. So it really reduces the trust by another margin.
Let's go into more Ellen Markets specific talk here. One thing I want to bring up is you guys are continuing to grow really impressively, actually. Like, I think it was August that you guys put up that number on Twitter. I follow along with a lot of your stats, and I believe it was over $50 million of volume. And that was like an all-time high. I'd love to learn more about what is catalyzing that, because you mentioned that, you know, one of the big drivers of activity on Ellen Markets is volatile Bitcoin markets. And it's kind of, I mean, we've had a couple of ups and down days, but mostly it's been flat for the last few months. So, or, you know, flat to down kind of. So what do you feel like is driving activity on Ellen Markets today?
When we're looking at volume, for example, on a daily basis, we still see that price volatility plays a role, of course. But what we've been working on as well is making the platform more reliable, so more, yeah, less bugs and more easier to use. And with the goal is to attract traders which have a huge volume. So, for example, you have 290% of users, but they only contribute 10% of the overall volume. And then the 10% that remain, they contribute 90% of the volume. So that's what we're kind of seeing. So there are just a few whales, if you will, on the markets, which contribute most of the volume. And so we're trying to keep them on the markets and to make the platform useful to them, so that they stay and then trade on the platform.
Now, I think I've got this correct. Correct me if I'm wrong, though. I see you do $50 million of trading volume. I'm pretty sure your fees are between 0.1% and 0.06%. If you're doing a high volume of trades, you get 0.06%. Low volume, you're 0.1%. So you're looking at somewhere in the range of like $30,000 to $50,000 of revenue per month if that calculation is right. And that's like a really impressive, you know, it's a real business. And it's cool to see that there's companies on Lightning that are achieving this milestone, getting to, you know, 50,000 of revenue a month. That's like, you know, there's momentum there. That's a real, you know, it's a good stepping stone for building out like a sustainable long-term business. Are you able to comment on whether that's coming primarily from futures or options, or, you know, what that kind of revenue mix looks like?
Oh yeah, it's clearly futures. It's like, I don't have the number, but I'd say it's more than 90% futures and then less than 10% on the options. Options are not, clearly futures are the prominent feature on the platform. We will be looking at making options maybe more useful and more complex. So with option strategies in the future, but right now, yeah, it's mainly futures. We think it's because it's the product is just easier. It's you don't have to set a strike price. You don't have to set an expiry. You just open the future in the direction that you want, and that's it basically. So.
And you do also have a swap feature, which I believe that's currently free, correct?
Yeah.
So no revenue there today.
No, we just, but it's the underlying instrument is just the futures we're offering on the website. Yeah. And the volume in swaps is not really big either. So yeah, I guess maybe the users that find an interest in having a stable balance in USD maybe use a stable sats or stuff like that.
So now when you're thinking about how to go from this $30,000 to $50,000 of monthly revenue to like $300,000 to $500,000 or $3 million to $5 million in revenue, what are some of the big drivers that you think will get you to the next level and get you to the point where you're like, wow, this is a really sustainable business. It's kind of growing on its own. It's generating profit. What gets you there? Is it the equities that you mentioned potentially being an add-on feature? Is it doubling down on futures? Is it expanding the options, configurations that people can use? What do you think the big driver will be in the future?
I guess there will be many of them. One obvious one is to just reach out to more users. And so right now, I guess our typical user is a niche inside a niche, because you have to already have Bitcoin on Lightning, and be willing to trade futures and options. So I guess that's not that many people right now. So maybe one way to up those numbers would be to be able to reach users who don't have Lightning yet, for example. So let's find a way to reach them. New features. We're constantly looking at, for example, the option strategies that I mentioned earlier. We're looking at making the platform easier to use. And for example, one thing we could look at is how it could interact with Nostr. So maybe you could trade on LN markets without leaving your Nostr client. Maybe that would bring some users from Nostr who don't really know about LN markets yet, and who could use the platform from the Nostr client. Classical growth, I guess.
Is there anything else on the roadmap for LN markets that you're excited about or you want to share more about?
So yes, there is this thing about DLC that we are working on, which of course is really interesting because it's really on the design phase. We're just evaluating what we can do with that. And apart from that, we're really trying to make the platform more usable and more reliable. And not at the moment, DLCs, I guess.
Now, I also want to bring attention to your Lightning newsletter. You've been writing this every week for over a year, and you've got some really great content in there chronicling kind of the news of the week in the Lightning ecosystem. And, you know, because you have this perspective and you've seen a lot of the cool apps being built, I'd love for you to share maybe some of your favorite apps or some of the most interesting ones, or the ones that people just aren't paying enough attention to. You know, what are the things that you go like, come on, everyone, you should all be using this. This is the coolest thing ever. And just no one's talking about it.
There are a few. For example, there is the Blix Toilet by Unpus, which is quite great, I think, because... We have wallets like Phoenix and Breeze, which are really easy to use, very plug and play. And so wallets that may appear a bit less easy to use might be overlooked. And so I think that's the case for Blix, for example, and it has come a long way. Now it comes with an integrated LSP, so you can have a channel with inbound capacity quite easily. And there are some features that I find interesting. For example, there is the, I don't recall the exact name, but something like Lightning Inbox, where the goal is to allow you to receive funds on your Lightning address in, it's not completely trustless, but it tries to minimize trust. And so basically the way it works is that the service will hold the funds for you until you come back online, and it will try to reach you to send you a push notification to wake the wallet up. But if it can't do that, it will hold the funds for you while waiting for you to come back. I think what Mutiny are doing is really impressive as well. With the latest release, they introduced Noster contacts. And I think contact lists are something really that was kind of missing, because it's, if you look at the regular fintech apps, Venmo, Cash App, stuff like that, there is always a contact list where you can really easily find a friend and send them $10 for, I don't know, splitting the bill, something like that. And it was really missing from wallets. And you could, for example, send to a Lightning address, but there was no way to just, hey, I already paid this person yesterday. It's still the same address. I just want to pay that and not have to remember the address by heart. And so having a Noster contacts helps, for example, in this case. Of course, splicing, introducing Phoenix lately is really, really, I think, important for self-custodial wallets. And yeah, maybe the last, another development that I find interesting, and Mutiny actually did that recently as well, is how do you onboard people to Lightning in a self-custodial manner when opening a channel from an LSP typically costs, I don't know, 3,000 sats. Because, for example, if you you have a waiter at the restaurant and you want to tip them, and you're not going to spend $20 on your tip, and so you just want to send a few sats, but they don't have a wallet yet, how do you manage the situation? So often the answer has been to just install a custodial wallet instead, like Wallets of Satoshi, for example, because it just for a tip, it might not make sense, economically speaking, to create a self-custodial wallet with the cost of opening a new channel. And so what could be done is on a self-custodial wallet, maybe the wallet provider could hold the funds while the balance is still low, and, for example, grant the user eCash tokens in exchange as an IOU. And when the balance reaches a certain threshold, then it would use this balance to open a real channel this time. And so having this kind of hybrid mode where you start custodial, but inside a self-custodial wallet, which would make the transition really easier and maybe even quite transparent for the user. Maybe the wallet could just say that there is a subscription for using the wallet self-custodially and you just have to pay this and it opens the channel. You don't even have to care about opening a channel. It just says, here is a one-time purchase and yes, just agree and things are set up on your end and you can use Lightning self-custodially. So now the question that remains is, would people see the value in using Lightning self-custodially? The problem is that as long as you're not rugged, you don't necessarily see the value in holding your own keys. But yeah.
Do you think we'll see more self-custodial usage on Lightning? If you think about the mix, I imagine right now, depending on the metrics you use or the numbers you refer to, we're probably looking at like 90%+ custodial usage on Lightning today. If you had to guess at maturity, once this ecosystem reaches everyone and is kind of like an established, once Lightning is more established, what does that mix look like in your view?
I hope it will be higher, definitely more self-custodial usage. There are some innovations that help achieve that. So LSPs are one of them. Things such as Greenlight are another one, because you can just have the complex part of Lightning node in the cloud and just have the signer on your phone and you just don't have to bother with a lot of stuff. So there's really work in progress to make it less and less difficult to run a Lightning node, even inside a very constrained environment such as a phone. But still, the problem is it will always be costlier, I think, to have a self-custodial wallet than a custodial one, until you lose everything because your friends were on a custodial wallet. So maybe if we get a big rug pull like we had with a Dropbit, I don't know if you were probably around at the time, but there was a Lightning wallet called Dropbit, which was a custodial wallet. I think it was in 2020. And I don't remember the exact story, but I think the founder was arrested by the FBI, something like that. And the funds just vanished. But as Lightning was still quite small at the time, it didn't have such a huge impact. But for example, if you imagine that Wallet of Satoshi has a problem tomorrow, maybe it will have a big enough impact that people will finally start to understand why self-custodial Lightning is important.
Yeah, that's definitely possible. One final question is, are there any tools that, you know, having looked around at the Lightning ecosystem and watched closely as the ecosystem has developed, are there any things, you know, outside of the scope of trading, any things that you think need to exist, but no one's working on it yet, or not enough people are working on it yet?
Yeah, I think people are kind of working on it, but it's just a time to market thing. But Lightning has the opportunity to completely replace every subscription based mechanism. Because for the companies that is offering the subscription, of course, it's interesting to have to know that you'll have a fixed revenue coming in every month. But now for the user, it might be more interesting to pay per use. And so I think what Lightning can bring is optionality in this regard. For example, you can decide to pay per use for internet searches, for example, because there is a search engine called Kagi, which announced they accept Lightning payments. And right now they're running a subscription model because they are coming in from more the fiat payment method. But I think once it matures, they will see that they can have per search payments. And so basically microtransactions, where you just pay for every search and can be made completely transparent for the user using browser extensions. You just set a budget and you forget about it. And you say, I want to pay only $5 for web searches this month. And every time you make a web search, it will use this budget until it runs out. And there are really a lot of things that could could be completely changed with such a mechanism. Netflix could you could just pay per episode. I don't know, and you would just have to decide if it's more worth for you as a user to pay a subscription, which gives you unlimited content, or per use. And so, for example, in the press as well, especially online newspaper, you could pay per article, for example. And so, of course, it's being worked on because Lightning Labs, for example, recently published their L402, let's call it a plugin, which helps you transform your API into a paid API where people can just purchase stuff with Lightning on your API. And so it's, it's being worked on, but I think we're the rest of the world kind of still has to catch on what Lightning can offer in that regard.
All right, let's finish this off with some rapid fire questions. You ready?
Yeah.
If you could only hold one asset for the next decade and it could not be Bitcoin, what asset would it be?
I guess it would probably be gold if I can't really hold Bitcoin.
I want to hear a prediction for the end of this year. So December 2023, how much volume will LN Markets do? You did 50 in August, and I think that was an all-time high.
I guess, let's hope, maybe 70?
70 million? All right. I like it. Are there any builders in the Lightning ecosystem that you'd like to give a shout out to for doing great work?
Lots of. There is, so I guess the Mutiny team, for example, really does a great job. Fiat Jaff, so is a bit more controversial in the Lightning ecosystem right now, but he definitely played an instrumental role in developing Lightning and LNURL and stuff like that. I like what's being worked on around the LSP spec. So there is an ongoing work on coming with a common specification for LSPs, which is led, I think, by the Synonym team, by Aliash from Bolt Observer. And maybe also the Async team. I think they're really doing a great job. They're always at the forefront, both with their Lightning implementation as with a Lightning wallet.
Thanks so much for taking the time to chat today. Where can folks go to learn more about you, your newsletter, and LN Markets?
So you can find the newsletter at blog.lnmarkets.com. And if you just remove the blog dot, you can reach LN Markets. And you can find me on Twitter. It's at Fanis Mikalakis. Or on I'm on Noster as well. So it's npub. Fanis, but with a G instead of the I, because you can't use I in Bash32, but yeah. So I'm on Noster too.
Well, thanks again for the time. Hope we can do it again soon.
Yeah, thank you very much.